Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. Thank you very much for tuning in to 101.5 on your FM dial. We try very hard to entertain you, to inform you, and if you really pay careful attention, once in a while we may amuse you. So, to begin with today, our first item is called PitchCom. And I'm going to start off by talking about the New York Mets catcher, James McCann. For his entire baseball career, New York Mets catcher James McCann has dropped into his squat position behind home plate and cycle through the incoming pitch's sign sequence by pointing and flipping his right fingers between his legs, as do most catchers. Well, now it's being phased out by a magic-influenced system that's as easy as pressing a button. Because Major League Baseball announced prior to 2022 opening day that PitchCom, which is a technology that allows the catcher to call a pitch without putting the signs down, will be allowed for this season after it has been tested in the minor leagues last year. Once McCann presses a button on a device he wears on his left wrist, the verbal commands are sent to miniature receivers equipped with an antenna and speaker that informs the pitcher and selected fielders of the call that the catcher has made. The catcher also has a listening device to make sure he pushed the correct button. The receivers fed into the lining of the ball player's caps while they're in the field. You don't even notice it, said Mets pitching reliever Adam Ottavino. It sort of whispers to you. The guy can be calling the pitch well before the batter is back in the box. Get that out of the way. You don't have to think about signs when there's a guy on second base. Five players, including the pitcher and catcher, can have earpieces at any given time. The Mets initially allocated earpieces for the fielders up the middle, as they say, the shortstop, the second baseman, center field can be equipped with this. And the Mets initially did that. Well, it's made by ProMystic, this device that is now changing the flashing of signs to the pitcher from the catcher. Signs which before even went to the men in the field by various means, which if you were very careful to watch, you might find sometime when you go to a game. ProMystic is the company that creates and designs similar technologies for performing magicians and mentalists. And it developed PitchCom. The company founder, John Hankins, said he was inspired by the fallout of the Houston Astros electronic sign-stealing scandal a few years ago, which used an instantaneous video replay system to decode catchers' finger signs in real time in order to create a technology that protected the game's integrity. In order for it to be adapted in baseball, to the game of baseball, it needed to be invisible, or as close to invisible as possible. The goal of communicating signs discreetly isn't very much different than a magician or a mentalist conveying covert information. So the company knew that it had to be more complex in this new device. In fact, more complex than a Morse code buzzer. PitchCom is also available in Spanish, Korean, and Japanese. Collaborating with Major League Baseball's security team to cover all of its bases, Pro Mystic is extremely confident that PitchCom cannot be hacked. All communications are encrypted to prevent decoding, and the trillions of code combinations make it impossible to predict, according to the company. Even baseball traditionalists, who may balk at the introduction of technology into the game, they will appreciate that if it speeds things up, it has to be helpful. The primary limitation is that the verbal signs don't dictate pitch location. And the Mets pitcher Ottavino said one potential workaround this is that the first pitch called will determine the location before the pitch type is crystallized, or vice versa. That's definitely the hardest part, said McCann, the catcher. Pressing those little buttons, you got to figure out a way to do location. And that, my friends, is baseball entering the world of high tech. And it may be here from now on and become even more complex than this. So be patient. Let's hope that this does make games a little faster and that any other technology introduced doesn't take away from the game we love. Now I'll step away for a moment or two. I'll be right back. It's time now for a little bit of meteorology. What I'm referring to is people can write letters to Tom Skilling, the WGN meteorologist. These letters are published in the Chicago Tribune. They ask Tom questions about the weather, and he answers them in the Tribune. So I found this one this past Sunday. I thought you'd like to hear it. It's called, "Dear Tom, waves on Lake Michigan seem higher in the winter than they do in summer. Why is that?" Well, Mary Rush wants to know. And Tom said, "Dear Mary, it has to do with air and water temperature differences between winter and summer. When the air is colder than the water, that's the winter situation, more wind energy transfers to the water and builds higher waves. Warm air over colder water, that's the summer situation, transfers less wind energy to the water. When cold air blows over warmer water in the winter, it heats and it lifts off the water surface and is then replaced by stronger wind from above. Stronger winds are constantly sinking to the lake surface. But warmer air blowing over colder water in summer is cooled by that water and hugs the lake surface, and it slows because of friction. Stronger winds higher up do not build down to the lake surface. So the next time you're downtown Chicago, driving along Lakeshore Drive, notice the waves and remember the season that you're in, and you'll know why the waves are larger during the winter season. More in just a minute or two. I'll be back. In a letter to his daughter not long after the United States won its independence, Benjamin Franklin branded the bald eagle a bird of bad moral character. He wished, he wrote, that it had not been chosen as the representative of our country. Many believe that he also lobbied for the turkey as national bird. Well, that's not true. However, the fact is that Congress has never chosen a national bird as it has a national mammal, the bison, and the national tree, the oak. What the Continental Congress did was put the bald eagle on the Great Seal of the United States in 1782, long venerated by native cultures. Our bald eagle lives only in North America, a distinction that suited a young republic that was eager to assert an American-born identity separate from Europe. Ever since, the bald eagle has reigned as a symbol of national unity and strength. Despite Franklin's views, Americans immediately began displaying its image in public ceremonies and on organizational regalia. Yet they simultaneously targeted the living bird for eradication, as they did other predators, such as wolves and coyotes. Throughout the 19th century and beyond, an eagle was seen as an eagle to be shot. Newspapers, government officials, and ornithologists wrongfully accused the species, which primarily eats fish, of carrying away sheep and calves and pigs, livestock that exceed its lifting power. Detractors even cautioned mothers that the white-headed raptors would kidnap their babies. For sad to relate, according to the New York Sun in 1905, the original of our national emblem is a scavenger, a coward, and a thief. Once a fixture across the country, the persecuted bird began disappearing from an increasing number of states. Of the millions of people who daily see our national emblem on coins and arms of the country, Nature magazine noted in 1923, a very large proportion have never seen an American eagle in the sky. And by 1940, a year before declaring war against fascist tyranny, Congress passed the Bald Eagle Protection Act to preserve a symbol of the American ideals of freedom. Harming an eagle then brought fines and even a prison sentence. Yet 5 years later, when eagles were poised for recovery, DDT became available for general use. Collateral victims of the pesticide's widespread application included countless fish and birds. And by 1963, the bald eagle's nesting population in the contiguous U.S. had fallen to a despairing 487 pairs, far fewer than but a single state would have hosted before the revolution. At the same time, Americans had fouled their own nests. Biocides tainted their food, factory, and automobile exhaust into the air. And waste products were tainted in their water. Recognizing that their quality of life and even survival depended on the same healthy environments that non-human species required, 20 million Americans nationwide participated in cleanup and tree planting campaigns and protest marches on the first Earth Day, April 22nd of 1970. Congress responded in swift order with a series of landmark environmental laws, including the Clean Air Act and Endangered Species Act. In just 1 year, 1972, the EPA banned the use of DDT. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service imposed harsher penalties for harming eagles, and Congress gave decisive bipartisan support to the Clean Water Act. Marking its 50th anniversary this October, the Clean Water Act initiated the revitalization of our rivers, our lakes, coastal waters, the majority of which were unsafe for fishing and swimming. Nothing would be more essential to the eagle's comeback than the Clean Water Act, as it restored their watery habitats. While more than a third of the world's national animals, from India's tigers to Tanzania's Maasai giraffes, are endangered, bald eagles are now thriving, and during the 2010s, their population quadrupled, reaching roughly 300,000 in the contiguous U.S. That's the equivalent to the estimated number in the 18th century. America's bird has become a symbol of a society that has forged a wiser balance with nature and a more secure future for humankind. Bald eagles have not changed since the adoption of the Great Seal. They've shown us that we can change. As we near the end of today's program, I thought it might be a good idea to tell you about the Aurora Borealis. One needn't incur frostbite or journey as far as northern Sweden to see the northern lights. The chances of glimpsing the nocturnal spectacle in the continental U.S. are greater than usual, because more charged particles produced by the sun are showering the Earth's magnetic field, which leads them toward the polar areas. And March and September remain the best months to see the northern sky lit with rose and pale green bands of shimmering light. But the season lasts into spring, if it comes. So, to see the northern sky lit with rose and pale green bands, check the space weather forecasts from the Geophysical Institute. That's the Geophysical Institute. Your odds are better at places like Maine's Acadia National Park, but any northerly dark sky reserve will do. You'll need clear and moonless skies, plus patience and luck, but it's worth it when you see them. It's something that you'll never forget. And now, as we look toward the end of today's program, I wanted to tell you that future programs, we're going to be talking about sanctions and flywheels. Those two terms have been dominating the news lately, especially the coverage of the war in Ukraine. As it continues, these words reappear. So we'll come back to that in a future program. And also, a number of programs ago, I promised you that I was going to talk about the great killer asteroid crash test. And I haven't done that yet. But I promise you that in the next program, if you're kind enough to tune in to 101.5, that I'll tell you about that. And also, I'm going to be talking about the oligarchs in Russia during this Ukrainian conflict. So, some interesting subjects. You'll want to tune in, I believe. And here are a couple of useful items as we leave. Companies sometimes need to ship less than a full truckload's worth of stuff. But rather than sending shipments on partially filled vehicles, a company by the name of Flock Freight has a platform that enables multiple clients to share space on one truck, which means cheaper prices and fewer emissions. According to the CEO, we've got to do our part to save the world. I hope that this is it. And then, the founder of the company Allbirds, Tim Brown and Joey Zwilliger, created their best-known shoe, a minimalist merino wool runner, back in 2016, and they hope to disrupt the synthetics-reliant sneaker industry. Since then, the Certified B Corporation has proven that sustainability sells. A November initial public offering valued the company at $4 billion. And it posted nearly $100 million in fourth quarter sales, which was a 23% jump. A new design, Allbirds recently launched in partnership with Adidas, releases less than a quarter of the greenhouse gases during production than a typical running shoe. And so, I think it's now time to consider ending today's show. To thank you for tuning in. We really appreciate your attention. We appreciate you listening to us. We try to do the very best in keeping you aware of things which you might not always see in the daily newspaper, and you might not hear on the evening news. And so we want to entertain you, inform you, and I don't know if we made you amused this afternoon, but in other words, that's something we'll try to do. So, my friends, be kind to each other. You be safe. Take care of yourself. Remember that we can help everyone when we help each other. And now it's time for my friend Willie Nelson and I to go down the road again, looking for those items which seem to fit right into a little of this, a little of that. And so it's time for Willie to take us on the road again. Willie, let's go.